Welcome to Mighty Parenting, the podcast with real, raw, and relevant talk about raising teens and parenting young adults.
Welcome to Mighty Parenting, where we help you raise teens and parent 20-somethings so they can become happy, successful, and emotionally healthy adults. I'm Sandy Fowler. I am your host today, and we're going to have a very interesting show today. We're talking about being selfish and how being selfish can improve your parenting. Before we get to that, though, we have a quick tip for you today, and it comes from our sponsor, Acree. They are at ecree.com, and they are the on-demand writing tutor for your students, so they can get help learning how to write and practicing essays 24/7 on any device, anywhere. And at this time of year, a lot of kids are still working on college applications. So a quick tip for parents is to encourage your child to select the essay prompt that is most interesting to them. Their writing is going to be fresher and more vivid and more interesting when they like the prompt that they are writing about. And sometimes they can get stuck, so they're just looking for some inspiration, just looking at different areas of their life to find a little bit of a spark to get them to write. So encourage them to look at the photos they've taken, look at their social media, see what they like, what they share, and just take a kind of a look at their whole life, what their interests are, just things that they found fun or funny or interesting, movies, books, anything, because that spark of inspiration can come from anywhere. That's a quick tip from Acree.com, your on-demand writing tutor. So do you ever find yourself struggling to get things done, to parent your child the way you want, to be who you want to be in life and in your relationships? It is definitely a common struggle, and I can certainly relate. I know this past summer, I struggled trying to do everything I normally do. I found myself working more evenings, not cooking as much as I normally do. I was using more frozen veggies and simple sides. In my family, that's red is boring sides, side dishes. You know, I was just making the same foods, and things were just not going the way that I really wanted them to. I felt that struggle. And even though I knew I was giving my family more of my time, I just didn't feel like things were great. And I was frustrated. At times I was stressed. Now, I know summer is always a little tougher for me to navigate because the regular routines are out the window. And not only are my girls home, and at, you know, these ages, when you start hitting those college and early post-college years, there are lots of times where they're gone. And now they're here, and Tom is a tutor, so his schedule switches from 6 days a week, gone all the evenings and a big chunk of Sunday, to he's around a lot more in general. And when he works, it's during the hours I work, which is great because we can spend time together, but it messes me up. And everybody's in and out, and they're checking in with me to ask questions, which is definitely a pitfall of working from home. So I was taking that step back this fall, and I was looking at my life, and what I saw was that I wasn't drawing good boundaries. This wasn't about what they were doing. It was about me. And I know, like I said, that that's a tough thing to do. Judy and I talk about this a lot and have worked on it, and she's worked on it harder than anybody else I know. But it's just, it's amazing to me how quickly life can get complicated and filled with stress or frustrating when we don't draw those healthy boundaries and stick to them. So I wanted to get help for us when I heard about today's guest and that she could talk to us about this idea of having boundaries, being a little selfish, taking care of ourselves. I jumped on that opportunity. Her name is Dr. Laura Dabney, and she is a relationship psychotherapist. She spent almost 20 years helping her patients change their lives for the better. And today, she's going to help us understand how to improve our lives and our relationships by being selfish. So, Laura, thank you for joining us, and welcome to the Mighty Parenting community.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited you're talking about all my favorite topics.
Well, you know, I do. I think these are hard, and I think that they're hard for everybody, but I think that moms really struggle the most. And I want to make sure that we get some help with that, that we're not just out here floundering around. And I found it interesting when I was looking at your work where you said that in order to improve our relationships, especially with our children, that we need to be selfish. And that really sounds counterintuitive to me. So would you explain that?
Sure. And the reason I wrote about it, so that it sounds counterintuitive to a lot of people. So I sort of developed this niche of helping couples without the couple. And that could either be, you know, of course, marriage couples or parent-child couples or a lot of times work couples. And I've noticed over and over again, there's this sort of idea that if I throw myself at everybody's problems or I fix everybody, then I'll be happy. And it's so hard for me to turn that around on them, saying, but you've been fixing, quote unquote, everybody, and you've been helping everybody, and nothing is better. In fact, everything is worse. And you have to focus on making yourself happy, whole, healthy. Then you'll be the best partner, the best person in the relationship you can be, and the relationship will improve. And so many times people came back to me with, isn't that selfish? Like, yes, it is. And what's wrong with that? And then we go on this whole path of, well, it's bad, it's wrong, et cetera, et cetera. So this whole idea of turning around to realizing, understanding that they only have control of themselves, they only can take care of themselves fully before they can adequately help somebody else. It is just a concept that was so foreign on a lot of people that I ended up writing about that. I've written about that quite a bit, actually.
Well, that's an interesting thing. You said everybody came back saying, well, but isn't that selfish? And you were like, yes, it is. And what's wrong with that? I think the term selfish has really gotten a bad rap. Right. The definition of selfish, and I'd have to look it up, but I have looked it up before, and I do recall that it did not say a terrible, horrible human being who cares about nobody else. That's not what selfish actually means.
Right. I sort of pushed them on the terms. It does have a negative connotation in our society, but why? You know, being self-centered is also a negative connotation, but what about having a good self-esteem and a good sense of self? I mean, those are all good things. So where is that line? And I think that's where we, in my therapy sessions, we sort of get into that whole struggle of where the line is, but it's only because they were either programmed, trained, or led to believe in some way in their past that it's sort of like this golden ticket. If I just help everybody, eventually they'll help me. And I won't have to say a word. I'll look totally selfless, but I'll get all my needs met because they're going to figure out telepathically to fix me. But if you don't understand what you want and need to the point where you can articulate it well, then you're never going to get your needs met. There is no fantasy that you fix somebody and they're going to automatically start fixing you. It doesn't work that way.
I have never thought about that before. I wrote this down. If I just help everybody, then they'll help me and meet my needs. Right. And what's funny about that to me is, it, number one, it's true. I mean, I can totally see where I've been at that point in my life without even realizing that's where I was. But that's actually the selfish side of it. I'm only helping them so that they take care of me.
Right. It's not only selfish, but a fantasy. It's never going to work.
Right. No, that does not work. So we need to, you said we need to be able to articulate what we need. Are there kind of some typical paths or steps that we can take to start really understanding what we need ourselves? Or is that just very different for each person?
Well, it's actually pretty, yes, there are some general paths or general patterns that I've seen over the years. And one is to start with the whole concept of, before you can articulate it, you have to help people understand it. And this, I mean, it never ceases to amaze me how difficult this is for some people to admit they have a need. So a lot of people who grew up thinking they got to help everybody else, and therefore feel selfish when they think about themselves, they think neediness is a bad or wrong emotion, what I call enemy emotion. They can't even say, literally, I need something in their own minds, because neediness means weakness, vulnerability. Well, and then I have to challenge them on that. Like, well, what do you, why does that make you weak? Well, if I say what I need, somebody could say no and really hurt me. I was like, well, yes, but you think about it for a minute. You're no more vulnerable or weak the minute before you say what you need than after. You're the same person with the same strengths, the same abilities, the same everything, except now you're much more likely to get the need met because you've actually put it into words. So it all starts with making sure they're not fighting themselves on even admitting they have a need. They have to be able to be comfortable with the idea that they are normal human beings with needs, and that is normal.
When we recognize that we have the needs, that we do have needs, and we'll get into that step of understanding, but I'm also wondering, how often are we actually able to meet that need ourselves and not have to rely on someone else? Not that it's wrong to let someone else meet that need.
Exactly. Exactly. That's exactly, that's a great point. So if they can articulate the need, is the first step towards getting the need met. And if you can sit with the need, what I call sit with the need, and be okay with it, as opposed to this, I got to get rid of that need because I'm weak, it's bad, it's wrong. If they can sit with that long enough, they'll come up with all kinds of options to get the need met.
I think that that is very interesting. And I know that that's happened to my poor husband before, when I just start getting, and I don't know how to express the way I feel, but there, I've recognized the feeling in myself now, and the thoughts that come with it are, you're not doing this, you're not cleaning up after yourself, you're not, I don't know, washing my car. He's, you know, it's all these thoughts of these things he's not doing that in my mind he should be doing that relate back to me, because if he's not picking up after himself, then obviously I have to do it. And if he's not, you know, calling after work to see if I need him to pick up something at the store, that's all about taking care of me. And when I hear those thoughts in my own head, or I hear those words, hopefully not, but when I hear those words coming out of my mouth, that's a red flag for me, mm-hmm. that I'm not making sure my needs are met, that I'm not taking care of me in whatever form that is, whether it's something I need to do for me or something that I need to ask someone else to do for me.
Right.
But it's that I'm pushing that all on him. And that is certainly not good for our relationship. And the same kinds of things can happen with our kids, although not for me, not in the same way, not to the same degree in that.
Right.
But I can see where, especially as our kids are growing, as they're getting older, and they need us in different ways, and they doesn't feel like they need us as much, that we can kind of start grasping at them instead of taking that time and stepping back and going, okay, why is it that I feel so lost when they hit high school and they're just gone so much more? And then, you know, 4 years later, they're either move out to do a job or to do an apprenticeship or go to college. And then they're really gone. And I know sometimes as parents, we can get stuck in that place of horribly, horribly missing them. And not that we shouldn't miss our kids, but to an unhealthy extent, I would think that would also feed back into this same loop of, I have a need that in some way my child was meeting and now they're not.
Yeah. And this is where it gets a little tricky, because it's different. So you have a contractual relationship with your spouse to take care of each other's needs. You do not have that with your child. Being a parent is the only truly altruistic job relationship that there is. You give to your kid, and your kid should not be giving back to you. You should not be depending on them to fill your needs. And this is where some parents go a little bit awry, because they will, if, for instance, if the spouse isn't there and they're not comfortable getting their needs met or expressed to another person, they will put that need on their child, and that's not fair and not right, actually. So there's nothing wrong with missing your child. That, there's no line of it's too much or bad. It's when you put that need to see them on them that it becomes a problem.
Yeah, that it is a kind of a subtle distinction there, isn't it? It, and I think what you just expressed is a nice way to be able to decide. I can just miss them, and if I feel that feeling, that's fine. But when I'm actually turning that around to create expectations for them, to put that back on them, that they should be doing things to make me happier, to make this feeling go away, then that's when we cross the line. Did I understand that correctly?
Exactly. Or penalizing them. Like, so if you said to your child, you know, I just have a need to see you. Are you available for lunch next week? And they say, no, I can't, then you have to be able to not punish them for it. They don't need to meet that need. They're not, there's no contractual relationship to meet that need. And you have to then go on to find a friend or your spouse or someone else to fill that need, without penalizing them.
Yeah, so there's this difference again. It would be healthy to express, if they said, no, I can't, to express and say, okay, I am really missing you. I'd like to find a time where we could get together, or if you can't do that, maybe have a good phone chat or video chat.
Right.
But to not require that, and then to recognize if we're feeling like we want to push that on them, to take that step back again and go, okay, what is the need in my life that's not being met?
Right. And then there's certain needs you can express with your children, certain needs that you can't. So if you need to figure out your finances, or you need to vent about your spouse, their dad, their mom, those kind of things are off limits completely. Right. So if you have a grown-up need, right, they should not be brought into your problems that are your grown-up problems that require another grown-up to take care of. So there's these certain needs with between you that are, you know, healthy and you want to express because it teaches them how to express those needs. But the parents who kind of treat their children as friends, as opposed to the parent-child, no matter how old they are, that's where they get into trouble. Then the child feels like they have to connect with the parent at the expense of their development and their milestone at this point, which is to separate.
Interesting. And that would that also apply to kids who feel like they need to take care of their parent?
Yes, exactly. So when you put these adult needs onto them that aren't theirs, then that's when they start thinking, oh my gosh, my mom can't handle this without me, or she needs me. And that's when it gets in trouble, because their only job, they're not in a marriage, their job is to separate from you. And they have to know and trust that you're okay and can deal with all your problems by yourself. They get any sense that you're not good or okay with them being separate, it'll undermine that goal for them.
Interesting. And so that goes into this idea of drawing boundaries. These are boundaries around things that we should be discussing with our child. But there are a lot of ways that boundaries play into our life. Could you share a little bit about how you see us allowing, not drawing boundaries, or maybe drawing the wrong boundaries, to negatively impact ourselves, our life, our relationships?
Yeah, so the boundaries and the needs that are healthy to express with your growing child are about interpersonal things such as respect or crossing boundaries, all these things. So to verbalize when a child, let's say, is screaming at you, there's some parents who will just like, well, that's a teenager and I guess I just have to handle that. Or the ones who start controlling their child, you know, you can never raise your voice and da da da. Those two extremes are not what you want to demonstrate to your older child, because that's what they're going to then develop and treat their peers that way. So that's where the place is to verbalize what your need is at that point. I hear that you have something's wrong, but it makes me very anxious when you yell. I need you to lower your voice or bring the volume down, so I can hear you and we can work on this together.
Okay, I never would have used, had that specific thought of when they're yelling, we, it's a time for us to express our need in that moment.
Right.
I do know that I talk to people about managing things before they get emotional about it. So that is a, I think also a good way to help us in that moment. If we feel ourselves triggered, they yell at us, we get angry. Mm-hmm. It gives us something to fall back on because we take a moment and think about what is it I actually need in this moment. Right. And then outside of that situation, when we have more time on our own, we can think about, well, what's going on in me? What's my need that's not being met? Or what is the reason that they're yelling is triggering me so much? Because when we respond to that kind of intense emotion with emotion, everything just escalates and it does not go well.
Right. And the problem is when children are younger, we do have to either cave or take control because they're young and they can't intellectually do the work of, you know, talking through a problem. That's where I see most parents make mistakes is they continue that same behavior into when the child's in middle school, high school, college, when we should be helping them with their intellectual capacities. I mean, their brains are exploding at this point, and we want to help them with that by having that kind of discussion. You know, you seem to keep blowing up at me about your curfew. Can we please have a discussion about it? These are my feelings about your curfew. What are yours? And then finding that compromise. Because that demonstration, that's what you want them to do with their spouse one day. You have to demonstrate the behavior you want them to then carry with them into adulthood. Taking their phone away for a week does nothing for them. There's nothing for their development. Letting them yell at you or mistreat you does nothing for their development. That's where you have to start saying what your needs are and respecting theirs enough to come to a compromise like you would with a friend or your spouse.
And I think that at the beginning of that, you also said, you know, we can, if our child is yelling at us, tell them, you know, I hear you and I need you to stop yelling now. I think even that we can start when they're younger with a little tweak to it.
Oh, yeah.
But I think that those were great words. Yes, the big involved conversation isn't going to happen with, you know, a three-year-old. But the idea that, because I know we do have parents, while we are teens and 20-somethings, we get letters from parents of toddlers who are like, oh my gosh, this is helping me so much. And so that is a piece that we can take all the way back. It's also something for us to stop and check and say, did we do that with our teen or 20-something when they were younger? Because if we didn't, then we need to teach those skills now. We can't expect them to know something that we didn't take the time to teach them. And sometimes we don't realize that we didn't teach them that.
Exactly, because of our own history. Maybe we weren't taught that.
Right. Or the common culture is, oh, your kid's disrespectful. Like you said, take that phone away. And everybody's so obsessed with teenagers and their cell phones and getting the phones away from them, right, as if that's going to help. And the way I see it is if they're angry and yelling, there's an emotional issue going on. Taking their cell phone away from them is only going to create stress because that's how they function in their life. It's not a frivolous thing for most teenagers. Right. That's the only way they have to communicate with people. Their calendars are on there. They even have school assignments and things are, you know, online and that. So like you said, though, that isn't about their development.
Right.
It's how can we help them develop? So what are there other ideas or do you have something else that you wanted to expand on about that? Because I like this idea of exploring, okay, If I don't know how to acknowledge and be okay with the idea that I have needs and I'm not expressing that well, how can I dive in and do this with my teenager, especially if it's in a high emotion moment or a time when they are being disrespectful to me, which is a trigger for most parents?
Well, yes, of course. Nobody likes to be disrespected. It causes everybody to be upset. But the key point is there, what you're saying, I think, is that you're recognizing it. And there's nothing wrong with, lots of times we're going to make the mistake of reacting back. Another key is to be able to go back to your teenager, because we would want them to do that in the real world. Go back to them and say, hey, that didn't go well. Your voice was raised. I'm so sorry I got angry at you, but I would like to try again and have this discussion if you're in a place you can do that. So I call that the postmortem. So when something goes wrong, there's other parents, again, a mistake is just to let it go. They're so afraid to go back and have the discussion because they're so afraid that means it's always going to blow up. But that's rarely true. If you go back when you're calm, that at least you're calm. So there's a high chance that your teen will be calmer too. And then you can have that discussion. So don't let the blow up, cause you to be sort of self-punitive and, oh, I blew it. Parenting is making mistakes and then admitting them, again, is a way to teach your child to, when they make a mistake of blowing up or handling something not in the best way, they can go back and say, hey, I didn't handle that very well. Can we try again?
So in here, the boundaries that we talk about there is a boundary here. It's not okay for them to be disrespectful to you. Not in the sense that we need to punish them, but right. In the sense that we need to say, hey, this isn't okay to be yelling at me about this. I'm happy to talk to you about it, and I understand you're emotional.
Right. Exactly.
But it's not okay to be disrespectful to me. So there is a boundary there. It's just a healthier one that recognizes what's going on rather than a punitive sense of you're disrespectful, I am instituting a punishment.
Right, because not only are you demonstrating, practicing with them how you want them to have relationships going forward, you are also you are respecting them in their milestone of needing to separate from you. You have to keep in mind that their job is to break away from you. We all hate it. It brings up tremendous grief. But what I tell my parents all the time is, there's a beautiful relationship on the other side. If you can set them free and let them go free, they will come back to you and form a more kind of like a friend to a friend. It's never totally like a friend to a friend, but more of a friend to friend relationship with you, because they understand you're comfortable with them leaving. So part of that disrespect you have to understand is their way of breaking away from you. So that's why you have to not punish it. Otherwise, they're going to get the message they can't break from you, and they'll either resent you for it greatly or they won't break away. Both are bad for both of you. So by saying, okay, wait, instead of penalizing them for yelling at you, say, this isn't going to work for me, just like you would do a friend, right? You have to start thinking about this in terms of, would you take away your friend's phone if they spoke to you inappropriately? Well, my friend would never speak inappropriately to me. I'm like, well, sometimes friends do say things that hurt you or without even knowing it, and you wouldn't take their phone away because it's ridiculous. You have to keep that in mind with your child too, that, okay, we're going to talk about this again, but we both need to respect each other in order for this to work.
Okay, so let's talk about eye rolling, because I can totally see this. This makes all the sense in the world to me in a verbal conversation, being able to say this. And it could have started with eye rolling, or when you say that to your child, you might get the eye roll. And I think that in many cases, the eye roll is the first form of disrespect that we start getting from them. And we can set a tone for how we want our relationship to be by how we handle that. But I'm kind of at a loss. What can we do, and does it vary by age?
I think, like you said earlier, I like that point. Sometimes you can always start early on talking about these things, but you might then have to step in with a very young child and take over if they're not able to stop hitting, for instance. You may have to hold on to them and, a bear hug type thing and keep them from hitting. But as they get old, so no, there's no real age, but what I like to think of it more as, what can you tolerate? What distancing can you tolerate? We don't have to tell them everything they're doing is upsetting. If they stomp up the stairs and slam the door, can you just let that go? Let them have that distancing. It's almost like it's a win for them. Okay, You slam the door, you got it. Or the eye roll. Okay, so you got the eye roll. The tricky thing here is to be honest with yourself, right? Some things, as you would say, trigger people more than others. So like for me, if they stomped up the stairs and slammed the door, fine. I'm not going to say anything about it. Later I'll ask, you know, say, looks like you're upset. Can we talk about it? But eye rolling drove me crazy. So I would just like with the yelling, I would have to be honest with them and say, look, you know, I don't know if you know it, but you have this habit of rolling your eyes when I talk, and the feeling I get, I think you would need to know this about me. The feeling I get is that you are totally dismissing what I'm saying. And if you're totally dismissing what I'm saying, then we can't have a conversation. Our relationship gets hurt with that. So is it at all possible for you to please try not to roll your eyes? And then hopefully they say something along the lines, well, you always sigh when I say something. And I don't like that. I'm like, okay, all right, then fair enough. I will stop trying to sigh. And if you could stop trying to roll your eyes, I think we'll be able to have better conversations. It'll help us both.
One of the things that I have found helps in the situation, I'm chuckling because when it comes to that type of scenario where we're calling our teen or our 20 something out on something like that, mm-hmm. and they come back with, will you do this? I have found that what has worked really well is, yes, as you said, you know, first of all, okay, I'm sorry that I've made you feel that way, but then I actually invite them to call me out on it. Mm-hmm. Because I'll say, I didn't realize I was doing it. I may not know I'm doing it. I will work on it.
Yes.
But feel free to point out if I'm actually doing it. And I always make the caveat. I always go, and you got to be kind when you do it, because I'm not doing it on purpose. I'm just asking you to help me become aware of it. And they'll right. kind of chuckle. But I think that they feel more respected when I tell them that I don't mean to disrespect you, and I trust you to call me out on this. I trust you to be kind to me, and I really am making this effort to do something that's important to you.
It's so important what you just said there, and I love it, because what we're both saying is, and you just reiterated it, is we're talking from our heart. We're opening up. So that's where the intimacy can grow between a parent and child. Whereas if you say eye rolling is disrespect, you can't eye roll, you can't, or I can't help my signs, it's too bad. You know, all those things are dismissive. They're just statements that aren't even true. They're not written down anywhere. It's not like a court of law where there's things written down. The key is to tell your child from, this bothers me. Or even tell them a story. Teens love to hear stories about you from when you were younger. You know, my sister always rolled her eyes, and it always bothers me. And then you didn't know that, but so it's just really something that bothers me. So need you, if you can, to please not roll your eyes when we talk. So to talk from your heart, A, they're much more likely to comply because they understand, and it's such a much more intimate way of saying it bothers you, as opposed to this, you know, holding over their head that it's wrong or it's bad.
Yeah, and sometimes what they say back may not even be true, but sometimes they just need to do that. They need to maybe have a little bit of power in a situation, because when we talk to them, even heart to heart, even kindly, it's not a pleasant thing for any of us to hear that we're doing something wrong. And then if they come back at us and say, well, and you do this, as you told us earlier, we're teaching them how to behave in a relationship. So when they come back and our response is still loving and kind and says, okay, I'm sorry that I made you feel that way, and I will work on this. Right. That's modeling for them what to do in the future when somebody shares something like that with them. So I love that idea. Are there other types of boundaries that tend to cause us problems, or lack of boundaries that can tend to cause us problems in our relationships, particularly with our children?
Yeah, not holding boundaries. I think a lot of parents, again, back to this altruism is, you know, the key thing. We have that message drilled into our heads as parents from various sources. We have to give everything to our child. A, it's not possible, and B, it's not really a good idea. So, so many parents get so passive, and they somehow think that this is going to be a good thing for their children, their developing, growing children, and it's not. Children need to have a head of household. They need to know that their family is being headed by somebody who's competent and, you know, strong and confident, comfortable with themselves and all their emotions. If you get passive, it makes children, even adult, bigger, older children, anxious because they see you as gone. So almost like an abandonment. You're not taking the role of the head of the household or as the parent, and they need that. So many parents make the mistake of not even, again, acknowledging that they need a boundary, let alone putting them out there with a false sense that this is going to make their children grow into healthy people. They're going to get their way all the time, and then they'll be fulfilled and then be great. And it's like, no, no, you have to be able to give and take in this way we're talking about to have children go into adulthood in a healthy fashion.
So I mentioned this, you know, from the summer working from home and the constant interruptions. And it can be something as considerate and caring as, hey, I'm making plans with my friends and I don't want to stomp on anything you're doing. Or it can be, I'd like to borrow your car, but I want to make sure you're not going to need it. I don't want to assume that you're working until 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock or 2 o'clock or whatever. But it's frustrating. And so for me, it's still healthy to draw this boundary and say, this is my time for work. And I really need you guys to respect that and not interrupt me unless it's an emergency. Kind of like I did when they were little. My husband was homeschooling them when they were little, and I worked from a home office. And that's what I said. I said, unless you see blood, you don't knock on my door.
Right. Well, we said earlier about, I said something about the postmortem, the after effect of a bad conversation, but there's also the pre-discussion. So again, if a lot of times parents see these patterns and they just keep reacting to the pattern. I always ask them, well, what keeps you from heading off that pattern since you know it's a pattern? So to say, have the talk before you, you know, the night before your work day, to say something along the lines of, hey, so I've noticed that, you know, you come into my office a lot and sometimes it's not for important things. So let's say between this time and this time, are you comfortable with not coming to me at all unless blank, you know, a 911 type of situation. So doing that, having the talk before the problem to start breaking any patterns that aren't working for you is another great way to teach children how to do that and to keep your sanity.
Well, it's all wrapping around to this being selfish thing, because all of this conversation through the boundaries and the disrespect and everything else, what I hear is we need to do our best to not react emotionally. We want to be a calm and stable person for our kids so that we can hear what they're saying and come to them and talk to them in a calm and effective manner, even when they're upset. And if I know, at least for me, if I am not taking care of myself, if I am not doing the things I need to do to make sure that I have some calm and some peace inside of me to draw on, I'm not going to be able to do these other things. There's no way I'm going to be able to stand there while my child yells at me if I was already a stressed out mess before that happened. It's going to trigger me.
Exactly. So the whole put your oxygen mask on before you help others is really what you're talking about here, is we have to be able to be comfortable with putting ourselves first, knowing that a self-centric viewpoint is not the bad selfish, but the good selfish in terms of you're protecting your relationship. Anytime you let somebody cross your boundaries or you're not voicing some concern, the resentment builds and then you get the burying below, right? So you buried all this resentment thinking you're being kind, but then you're going to blow up. How kind is that? So you're really causing, you're preventing future problems by taking care of yourself first.
And you talked about this idea of, you know, what we're feeling and the stress building up and things like that. And that's what I always teach my clients. I'm like, stress is not a bad thing, but what it usually is a big, huge neon sign saying, pay attention here.
Right.
So when we start feeling that, that's the time to step back and go, what is my need here? What need is not being met? And give yourself, not selfishly, but not bad selfishly, but give yourself some time and some space. Leave your home, leave your office for lunch, do something. Give yourself 10 minutes in the car, walk down to the local park, go on a bike ride, do something where you can have a little space around you without people interrupting and think about it and go, why am I feeling blank, fill in the blank, when these things happen? Or why am I feeling this way so often? And then try to backtrack to, okay, what am I not doing for myself? What need is not being met? I recently, in the last year, discovered that I had a new need in my life that I didn't even know was a need. And it makes all the difference. I started doing yoga nidra meditation. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I must do that every single day. It just makes me that calmer, kinder person. I have more to draw on. That doesn't mean I'm never stressed. I'm never spazzed. I'm never in a whirl. But it means that when those things happen, they happen to a lesser degree. Or when something happens, I have kind of a pond to draw from, yeah, to help put out that fire a little bit, you know, some peaceful, calming water there. So I found it very interesting that what you taught us all came back to, yeah, we need to be selfish. Do you find that using that terminology even kind of helps us, one, shocking us by going, you need to be selfish? What? It just makes our brains go, hey, you know, what is that?
Right.
Or two, I'm thinking as a way of talking to our family about it and our kids that you can bring some humor in and go, okay, guys, we've been fighting a lot and I figured out the problem. I'm not being selfish enough.
Surprise, I mean, more selfish. Look at you. Yes, I mean, definitely I use it just for that purpose, to wake people up, because we've, you know, there's a lot written about having strong self-esteem and all that. This is just my way, my kind of tongue-in-cheek way of people going, what? And then we get to, I guess, into the discussion of what is selfish and what isn't. And, you know, most of my patients end up realizing, wow, I'm way at the other end of where I need to be. You know, the selfish line is not nearly as close to me as I thought it was.
All right, so mighty parents, we have homework. Hopefully this isn't hard homework though. So next time you have the opportunity to chat with your teen, with your 20-something, with your family, hopefully that is going to be maybe around a meal where you kind of have everybody together. There's the topic of conversation. That's your homework. Bring it up. Go, okay, guys. And you can do the humor side, or you can just go, I've been thinking about this idea of selfishness. What do you guys think it is? And just start that conversation and start teaching our kids at the same time that we're learning to be selfish and take care of ourselves. Start teaching them to do the same thing, because if they don't learn it now, they're going to be in that boat later on themselves. So
I'm going to add one thing there though, sorry to interrupt you, but I'm going to be more selfish, do more for myself. Watch how many of your kids say, well, thank goodness. I have so many parents be shocked that they thought they were fooling their kids by doing the whole throwing themselves at the kids and helping their every little bump. And the kid finally, when you say, I'm going to do more things for myself, they go, oh, good, because you're just in my space too much. You know, they actually end up finding out where you've been overdoing it for them to the point where they feel invaded.
Yeah, and I felt terrible at one point because I realized that, same thing, you know, I've said, I'm going to do whatever it was. I didn't say I was going to be more selfish because I didn't think of it that way, but it was the thing I was doing or whatever. And my kids were like, oh, great. It was this sort of this big sigh of relief. And in talking to them, what I figured out is, yeah, I was doing so much for the family. And not that I'm doing so much for the family, is that they saw that I was doing it at the expense of myself. And then they felt guilty.
Yes, right. So and that's not, helps gives you confidence.
That's not your job.
Right, right. Helps gives you the confidence that you can do more for yourself without hurting them. Doesn't hurt them.
Right. All right. So, Laura, for people who are like, oh my gosh, this conversation's so great. I want more from you. I know you have a great blog in that. So would you share your website, please?
Sure. It's lauradabney.com.
And Mighty Parents, thank you so much for joining us today and for being part of the Mighty Parenting community. And a big thank you to our sponsors for sharing great tips and being part of our community as well. Remember, when you visit mightyparenting.com, you can visit the sponsor page to see what they have for you, what kinds of things they've shared, tips and information. And remember, if you're taking the time to listen, if you're putting in this effort, you already are a Mighty Parent. You take care, be selfish, and I will see you next week.